contest scheduled for one fall with a one-hour time limit is for the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
And look at this capacity crowd.
About to enter the arena is the challenger from Columbia, South Carolina, weighing 270 pounds, the Patriot!
The Patriot bursting onto the scene here in the WWF. Does he have the guts to defeat a wily veteran, the five-time WWF champion, Bret Hart? And will the Hitman live up to what he has had to say in the past?
Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive in the classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Buckle up, because we are talking 1997 WWF and the Hart Foundation. Some of the best stuff in company history. This is Tom Healy, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Jeffrey Ryan. Jeff, man, do we have a lot to cover this week. But first, how the hell are you doing?
Doing good. I'm still living with a lifetime of jealousy towards all those kids that got Hart glasses during his entrance, but we're going to talk through that and some other feelings I have toward the Hart Foundation, so I am ready to go, my friend. I make no secret of being a mark for a good stable, and the Hart Foundation was really one of the best. So this is an exciting week for me. As always, we remind you, don't forget, subscribe to The Payoff so you can get those new episodes right away. Give us 5 stars and spread the word about the show. We appreciate everyone kind of reaching out and putting that out there. So you can always find The Payoff. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. We're at Payoff Pod. Either Tom and myself are always going to try and respond as quickly as possible. You can also find us. It's payoffpatreon.com. Just one tier. We got our after show. We got bonus episodes. We got discussions on pay-per-views and big shows and wrestling. Just all the things we hope our fans enjoy. So that's payoffpatreon.com. Tom, what else do you have to share with those listening?
Yeah, just a big thank you, first of all, for all of you for being listeners, but second, for those that engage on social media and share things and retweet things, that helps a lot because that's how we spread the word and let people know what we're doing here. So thank you to everyone doing that. It seems like it continues to grow each week, and we certainly appreciate that. Also, a big shout out to some new friends of The Payoff. We haven't had a chance to thank them yet, Jeff. Jonathan Coachman and Hacksaw Jim Duggan. We appreciate lending their talents to The Payoff. They both did an awesome job. I think it's really added some flavor to the show. And so thanks, Coach. Thanks, Hacksaw. We appreciate both of you. Last thing I have is just for our new listeners or those that haven't heard all of our episodes, make sure to go back in the archives and check them out. So there's some killer episodes in there. Raven leaving ECW, Shane Douglas throwing down the NWA belt, the ultimate challenge of Warrior and Hogan, and so much more. So make sure to check them all out. And Jeff, quickly, how do we do things here every Monday on The Payoff?
A lot to cover today, so just a quick rundown. We give you a deep dive into a match every Monday, and each episode has 3 parts. The build, the payoff, and the aftermath. Before, during, after. Keep it simple, get you all the content that you want to hear. We share a few reviews and write-ups from when the match occurred and then our payoff score. So Tom, I think everyone was a fan of Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation at some point. So what's got you excited about this one?
Yeah, I think Bret Hart obviously had one of the best careers in wrestling. Just did some phenomenal stuff, had longevity, great worker, lots of memorable moments, popular all over the world. But man, I think the best work he did, 1997, as a heel. And so I just hated but also loved everything about the Hart Foundation. I thought they were an awesome faction. I thought the faction made each of them bigger stars than they would have been individually. I love the Bret Hart heel work and the mic work and how he interacted with Austin and Undertaker and HBK and everyone else that summer as the Hart Foundation. So loved it. And this also holds a special place in my heart, Jeff, because, you know, the match we're going to cover took place in September of 97, but on July 28th of 1997, I attended a Raw in Pittsburgh, and that's the one famously where Bret Hart made a comment about how America being one giant toilet bowl, and then you'd stick the hose for the enema right here in Pittsburgh. Obviously, loud boos, we didn't like that, but it all worked out because at the end of the show, the Patriot beats Bret Hart, which people don't realize that was a massive, massive upset. And then, of course, I pop because Shawn Michaels is on the announce table taunting him after ripping him a new one on commentary. So fun night. One of the best shows, probably TV recordings I've ever been to. Love that show and just love the upset win. So again, it's that whole summer of the Hart Foundation, and I just dug all of this. And so for us to be able to cover the Hart Foundation, this stretch, everything else going on in the business at the same time, and knowing what was going to happen not long after this, no-brainer, fun show. I'm looking forward to it. How about you, Jeff?
Easy heel heat taking on the city, you know? That's how it goes. But I already alluded to it in my opening, but like I said, the Hart Foundation, it's just one of those stables, factions that it just had incredible success whenever they were around and just really a long time. And while the members changed and, you know, whether it face, heel, whatever it might have been changed, what didn't change was just how incredible they were to watch and what they contributed to wrestling as a whole. Bret is truly best there is, best there was, best there ever will be, especially not just him, but when you see who he was with in the Hart Foundation at this time and the names, it's really just some of the greats of the industry. So with that being said, you know what time it is.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right, here we are with the build. WWF. Ground Zero. This is going to take place on September 7th, 1997. We're at the Louisville Gardens in Louisville, Kentucky. Did I pronounce that right? Is it Louisville?
Yeah, anyway,
all right, we'll get corrected on Twitter. So we had just under 5,000 in attendance, a gate of 82,000, 180,000 pay-per-view buys. So just some fun facts for this. This is the 17th in-your-house pay-per-view. Now, Jeff, do you remember what they did at the first in-your-house pay-per-view?
I don't.
They gave away a house, which was kind of interesting. So they just called up a wrestling fan. I would assume it was someone that ordered the pay-per-view, not just like somebody sitting at home that didn't even know what the WWF was, but they gave away a house. So those used to be two-hour pay-per-views. This was the first three-hour in-your-house pay-per-view and the first one to use the in-your-house moniker as a subtitle as opposed to the main title. Now, on this show, we had Brian Pillman in his final pay-per-view match, defeating Goldust. Obviously, we'd have his untimely death just a month after that. Also, we had a fun moment where Steve Austin gave Jim Ross a stunner, which would then prevent him from being on commentary for the rest of the evening. Keep in mind, this is not long after the neck injury. So they kept Steve Austin around. They gave him a little bit of physicality, but allowed his neck to heal. And so they just kept him like red hot when he couldn't even wrestle. And that's not always easy to do. So did a great job with that. And then also on this show, the actual main event is in the last match that took place after the one we're covering with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker that would end in a no contest. Now, the reason it ended in no contest is because we're building to the first ever Hell in a Cell match, one of my all-time favorites, that would take place just a month afterwards. And just going on around this time, we had this Shawn Michaels-Undertaker feud, but then at SummerSlam not long before this, we had Bret beating The Undertaker for his world title, which Shawn cost The Undertaker, but he hated Bret, so he didn't want to count the three. So just really fun stuff going on at this time. Great, great rivalry between these guys, you know, each of them and collectively, and it was really fun. It's interesting because they didn't do a lot of like three-way matches or triple threats back then. That would have been interesting to see the three of them at this time in one of those matches. Probably would have been awesome. just a couple things going on in the business. ECW was under attack from Todd Gordon, who was heavily involved, obviously, in ECW. He's trying to recruit guys to go to WCW. Now, WCW is trying to acquire a bunch of talent because it had just been announced that they were going to have another weekly show. This is a two-hour Thursday show on TBS starting in January, which we would obviously know is Thunder. So Eric Bischoff's gone on record really in the last year or two since he's had his podcast just saying that was one of the big things that really crushed WCW was having the extra show and having to write for it, having to have talent on it. And I guess 2020 hindsight, maybe you would have done two different brands or two different theme shows, but the continuity of doing the two shows, the additional talent was certainly challenging for them. Also, Keller was reporting that Vince McMahon was about to be more hands-on with the booking. Now, keep in mind, this is 1997, so it's just funny. Bruce Pritchard was totally out of the power circle, according to Keller, and Cornette and Russo are helping out with television. So just interesting, all the changes and different situations they've had over the years in terms of who was writing the shows. And famously, it used to be a handful of guys sitting at Vince's pool booking out the territory. And now we have, I don't know, 80 writers or whatever it is. So just interesting how it's changed over time. Also, the hope around the WWF was that Steve Austin would be able to return in 2 months to the ring, again, after that neck injury in the Owen Hart match. Now, it's just wild to think he's injured. We're hoping he can come back. He's going to work a limited schedule. And then, man, he would go on what would turn out to be the better part of a five-year tear that was probably as good as anyone's had in the history of the business. Also, Mark Henry was training up in Calgary to potentially become a wrestler. So he was up there in the old Hart territory and ultimately would go on to have a fantastic career, but certainly a raw talent back then. You know, another thing I saw in my research, Jeff, was there was some speculation about the WWF starting to crack down on what they would call recreational and prescription drug use. It was always challenging because this time they didn't have drug testing and, you know, they're independent contractors. So it's like, all right, show up, do your job. We're not going to judge you or monitor what you're doing when you're quote unquote off the clock. But obviously there was a lot of unhealthy habits and behaviors going on. Now, what I didn't realize was the wellness policy and true drug testing didn't start until 2006, which allegedly stemmed from Eddie Guerrero's death. So we're still 9 years away from true testing at this point. You know, it's interesting. Bret Hart said not that long ago, he's like, you know, I was backstage at a WWE event, and man, these guys are all like choir boys compared to the way that we used to behave. But I think overall, we're going to have performers in today's day and age that are going to have more longevity and probably healthier and happier and longer lifestyles and lives due to some of the better habits that are happening. Just another thing that was happening right around this time, you know, you think about the heat between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. Bret Hart obviously was not long after this going to leave the company, but 2 weeks after this pay-per-view was when Shawn famously came out in those like biker compression shorts and he stuffed the crotch, and there was speculation that maybe he was under the influence and he's like just acting ridiculous. And so that was going to happen not long after this, which obviously pissed off Bret Hart and led to him not wanting to do the job for Shawn. And again, I share all this because it was just a wild time. And it's like every corner you turn, every week, there was just some other crazy shit happening in the business. And we're just talking about the WWF. Keep in mind, you had ECW and everything they were doing, okay? And then you had WCW and everything going on there. So it was just a wild time to be a wrestling fan, as I feel like we often say on this show. So with that being said, Jeff, as always, walk everyone through from a storyline standpoint, how was the Hart Foundation formed? How did we get to this Patriot Bret Hart? There's so much stuff to unpack here. So what do you have for us?
Yeah, I'll start with our guest superstar, the Patriot, Adele Wilkes, as he was known when he was starting in 1988. He first showed up in the AWA, which is the American Wrestling Association. He was also known as the Trooper back then. In my research, he would give out tickets after his matches, so early shades of the Fashion Police. If you haven't seen a photo of him, make sure to check out our Twitter or just look him up. As the Patriot, he wore a mask with it had the stars and stripes on it of the American flag. It had a little bit of an eagle as well on the front. and he carried the American flag to the ring. So he just had a cool look. He spent some time in a Global Wrestling Federation, GWF. He had his first stint in WWF in 1991-92, a couple runs in All Japan Pro Wrestling, WCW. But the second stint in WWF, this was in 1997-1998. It was barely a month into this run where he started feuding with Bret Hart. As you might guess from his name, The Patriot, he was pro-American in the outfit, of course. And Bretian, they were the pro-Canada or anti-American faction. So taking that angle as the face and heels. Also, for those of you that have never seen The Patriot and his entrance, he and Kurt Angle actually share the same entrance music. And so it can be a little jarring the first time you see it and hear it because you think of Kurt Angle. There were no "you suck" chants back then. And I'm not sure exactly if he passed it down to Kurt. I couldn't find anything reliable kind of out there of why that music was used. And I don't want to share something that's not true, but it's just interesting to kind of hear that and him coming out to that. So that's the story of The Patriot. So before we get into the match a little bit more, let's talk the Hart Foundation. The original Hart Foundation, it started in 1985. I was just a young tyke. I was barely one. And it was a heel team with Bret Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and it was the ageless Jimmy Hart, which we just recently saw him, and he looks the same. Good-looking guy. So
he looks the exact same as he did in 1985.
He's still got the megaphone, too.
34 years ago, and he looks the exact same.
Good for him. So this first Hart Foundation, inaugural, if you will, they broke up in 1991, and each of them, they really had good singles run on their own. They really did a lot just separate from the Hart Foundation. So that was 1991. They reformed again in 1994, but this was just Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart. And so again, it kind of fizzled off fairly quickly. It wasn't super successful compared
to
the first time.
Do you remember their outfits that they wore to the ring?
No, I do not.
Okay, when you get a chance, you need to Google that, and then we need to post a picture on Twitter. It's absurd.
We will check it out for sure. So I have that. And then so 1997, it is when I say this Hart Foundation reformed. And check out this list of people. It's Bret Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Owen Hart, the British Bulldog, and Brian Pillman. And they were once again the pro-Canadian stable. Now, this was after WrestleMania 13 in 1997. Bret defeated Stone Cold in a submission match. So, Tom, do you remember the special guest referee of this match?
The world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock, who, by the way, apparently is still wrestling.
He is, and he called it right down the middle, too. So he's got the skills for a referee, too, if he ever needs to fall back on that. But this match really exceeded all expectations. It was a double turn with each character was shot into the stratosphere after this one, and it made Bret hated after this one. So Austin coming out is the face, going in as the heel, and then flip it for Bret. So kind of interesting dynamic there. It also gave us the classic crimson mask with Austin just blood pouring down his face while he was in the sharpshooter at this Mania. It was pretty much the top match on almost every list that year. It's still near the top of most lists even today. As always, like the star giver, Dave Meltzer, this was a 5-star match for him. So that's another one too, just fantastic. Kind of go back, check it out. I'm sure we will eventually cover it here as well. In the lead up to this match though, the Hart Foundation and their promos, it was your typical, they hated America, Canada was better. Just your typical heel heat trying to get it from all the crowds. Even like Tom said in his native Pittsburgh. So this is exactly what I want to see from a stable. And they had all the gold. They were the world heavyweight champion, the intercontinental champion, the European championship, and then the tag team champions as well too. With all these different guys and what they were doing, just really quite an era in all of wrestling. So really good stuff. The basics of this feud, though, between the two is that you got Bret Hart with the pro-Canada Hart Foundation against the Patriot and his pro-America, the Patriot. So as Tom already said, he actually beat Bret on Raw in the lead up to this. And then Tom's favorite wrestler, of course, Shawn Michaels, played a part in that, which then set up this World Heavyweight Championship between the two. So, Tom, it was the then WWF commissioner on TV who set this match up. Do you know who that commissioner was?
Sergeant Slaughter.
The one and only, absolutely. And he put in work, too, at StarCast, so shout out to him because he was there all 4 days working and meeting fans, so good for him. But with all this, though, that's how we got to the match. A lot happening, especially with the Hart Foundation at this time. So, Tom, what else do you have?
As always, great job with the build. Just a couple other things here in my notes. Not long before the match we're going to cover today was one of the best matches in company history, a really good one that we definitely need to cover on a future episode. That was the 10-man tag, the main event at Calgary Stampede. So you had the Hart Foundation coming home. It's during the big stampede that took place every summer in Calgary. They're in this like smaller, older building that was like loud as hell. And the Hart Foundation, obviously, would win, and they beat the team of Ken Shamrock, Goldust, the Legion of Doom, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was a great match, and again, I look forward to covering that here on the payoff. So that took place, and then keep in mind, the following month, in August, that's when Steve Austin has his neck injury at the hands of Owen Hart due to a botched tombstone pile driver type pile driver, but instead of landing on his knees, Owen landed on his butt. And I mean, you could clearly see Austin's bald head poking out. I mean, it was just a brutal, brutal spot. It's hard to believe he was even able to walk again after that. So again, just a lot going on in the wrestling business, just in the WWF at this stretch in 1997, but really great stuff. So each week as we get ready for the match, we like to give you a timestamp and let you know what we're watching. So this is Ground Zero 1997. When you hear the ding, 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 we're going to be watching the match at the 1 hour and 49 mark. So again, the 1 hour and 49 mark of Ground Zero 1997. And if you're watching the match elsewhere, it's just the beginning of the match is where we're going to start watching it. So with that being said, it's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right, we are at Ground Zero, and we are with the Patriot, Del Wilkes. Del, welcome to the show, and looking forward to talking about your excellent pay-per-view match against Bret the Hitman Hart.
Well, thanks for having me, and those are good times. I enjoy talking about them and discussing them, so let's do it.
So Bret's got the championship. We got the two of you in the ring right here. And all-time opponents, where does Bret Hart rank for you?
Well, he's up there, working with Bret, working with Kobashi and Misawa, working with Hanson. You know, Bret's in that, you know, working with some of the greats. And Bret was one of the greatest ever, so it was a pleasure working with him.
So your run in the WWF ended not long after this. You know, you had alluded in a different match that we watched together about some of the injuries you were facing. Tell us what happened, because pretty shortly after this, you were out of the WWF.
Yeah, it was ongoing injuries that I brought with me when I came to work for the WWF. And I got back home off of a pretty lengthy loop, and I just couldn't go anymore. And my body was failing me. I had a knee that was just shredded. I had a tricep that was shredded. I'm consuming stupid amounts of pain pills just to keep going. And I met with my orthopedic surgeon. He said, dude, he said, you're done. He said, with all the surgeries I need to do and the things that need to be fixed on you, he said, you can't continue. So we had a conference call with Vince and Jim Ross with JR, and we just laid it out on the line. And Vince said, look, man, he said, Dale, he said, go get yourself healthy. He said, you've got to get healthy. And he said, once you're there, once you feel like you're in good health and you're back to being somewhat like you were, he said, you're welcome to come back. He said, I'll even work you on a limited schedule if you want to. And Vince, it was very kind of him to offer that. Now, it never worked out where I did that. But yeah, I was damaged goods, man, when I got there.
Did you ever get back in the ring and work again after this, or were you done for your career at that point?
No, I think I've been in the ring twice since then. I was basically done then.
Do you remember where this feud was supposed to go? I mean, you have this pay-per-view world title match. Was this supposed to go on for a while? Do you know what the storyline entailed if you had been able to stay healthy?
No, I really don't. You know, it was one that was going to continue for a while. I don't know what the final outcome of it would have been, but whatever it was, it didn't matter because I just had to tap out. I was physically unable to continue to perform.
So you worked in both WCW and WWF. What were the differences between the two companies as a performer?
Well, I enjoyed my time in the WWF more, even though Brett and Shawn were feuding and there was tension there between those two guys. Outside of that, it was pretty much a good group of guys to work with and guys that got along and guys that enjoyed being around each other. WCW was totally different. It was just a bunch of miserable jerks that just went off in different little factions and complained about not getting pushed or complained about not getting used the right way. I hated going to the building every night when I worked for WCW. I literally did. It was the most miserable time of my career. I would have rather been back in Memphis when I first started working for $50 a night, staying in cheap, rundown, cockroach-infested motels than having to go to a WCW locker room. So it was a much better atmosphere working in, you know, for Vince in the WWF.
And Memphis is famous for having maybe not the best paydays, right?
Oh, listen, when I worked there, and this was in the 80s, late 80s, Memphis was $50 Monday night, $50. Louisville was $50. Evansville, Indiana was always a wonderful $25, it seemed, maybe even $15. I went broke working that territory. You know, a good thing I had some money saved up from signing bonuses with the Falcons and the Bucks and some money I'd made just going through camps in the NFL. Otherwise, I would have starved to death.
It's just amazing to think it cost you money working in Memphis. Because, you know, that the 25 and the 50, that didn't cover any of your expenses, right?
No. And listen, we did a lot of driving in that territory. I mean, you were in a car a lot, and when you're having to pay for a hotel and you're having to buy food and you're having to train in a gym and tan and do all those things and put gas in a car, yeah, you literally lost money working there.
So not long after this, Bret Hart leaves the WWF for the WCW. Do you think that was a mistake? Do you think he should have just worked it out with Vince and Shawn? Or do you think that, look, he took the money and he ran? Because, you know, his career obviously was a lot different, and it sounds like he experienced some of the same things in WCW that you did.
Well, I think Brett was torn. I really do. I was around Brett a lot while I was there and working with him, and he loved the WWF, and he loved working for Vince. That's all he had ever known outside of working for his dad was working for Vince, and that was like family to him, and I think he would have loved to have stayed there, but when somebody's waving that kind of money in your face, and listen, he was making great money working for Vince at the time, but when somebody's waving, you know, triple that in your face, I understand why you take it. Honestly, I think if Brett would have had his way and he could have said, look, this is the way I want it to be, it would have been that Vince could have matched that money or done something similar to that, and I believe he would have stayed, but it just didn't happen.
Well, and I always think about some of the guys that really took off not long after this, and to have seen Bret Hart, which, look, in this match, he is right in the prime of his career, both as a character, as he's flipping off the audience here, as well as just an in-ring performer. And, you know, the thought of him working for an extended period of time, the Steve Austins and all the other guys that were to follow him, I mean, it really would have been something else to see another few years of this run, because, I mean, this is the best work he ever did in his career.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was the zenith of his career. He was at his best. And like you said, in every way, physically, as an athlete, as a performer, as his character, he was the top of his game.
Ever talk of you getting the title in this match, or did you always know that Bret was going to be going over and moving on to other things, regardless of your injuries?
Yeah, I knew that there was nothing in the works for me to get the belt. Now, you know, I knew 2 weeks prior to this pay-per-view, Brett and I already had a finish worked out a couple of weeks prior to it. So I knew what was going on there and I knew what was going to happen.
And what happened? So the two of you get on the phone in the weeks leading up to this and you just spitball different ideas and thoughts for different spots. And what if you did this and I did that? I mean, what's a conversation like that with Bret Hart? Because I'd have to imagine that it would be fascinating for the fans to know.
we're just bouncing ideas off of each other. Hey, man, what are we going to do to start the heat? What do you want to do the first 15 minutes of the match? At what point in time do you want to get a go-home cue from the referee? How long do you think we need for the finish? What are we going to do for the finish? How do we start the heat? What do you want to do there? What do you want to do to start it? Just bouncing ideas off each other about what we're going to do, how we're going to get into the finish, how we're going to get into the heat, some comeback spots, things like that.
So at this point, obviously things have changed a lot in the business, but at this point, who is helping produce this match? I mean, there weren't a team of writers back then, but is there a guy or some guys in the back that were working with you that afternoon to work through some of the match?
Well, it was mostly just left up to Brett and I, but we certainly leaned a lot on Pat Patterson and Jerry Briscoe and bouncing ideas off those guys and just asking them for advice. Brett put a lot of trust in Pat, and I did too. So, you know, we did spend some time with Brett and Jerry just bouncing some ideas off them and getting some in turn from them. But for the most part, Brett and I were the ones that came up with the whole thing.
So in 2015, and I'll tell you what, Brett has this figure four on you, and now he's working the knee on the ring post. Do you remember that figure four on the ring post hurting? Because I remember as a kid thinking it looked stiff as hell and had to have hurt. Do you remember that hurting you at all?
Well, he was pretty good. He was a professional, and he could do it and make it look like it was hurting without it really hurting. So he did his job because it wasn't something that hurt or something that I dreaded doing. He did a good job of making it look like it hurt while it did not hurt.
Well, that was the magic of Bret Hart, right? I mean, the fact that he'd look stiff, but he never really hurt anyone, right?
No, not to my knowledge. As a matter of fact, he actually complained to me a couple of times about me being stiff with him, especially with that Uncle Slam move that I used. And I noticed the first couple of times he took it, he got up pretty high for me. But after that, he would make himself pretty heavy where I'd literally have to yank him out of his boots to get him up.
That's funny. So what was it like working with a mask on? I mean, is it easier because you don't have to show any facial reactions, or is it tougher because it's harder to convey emotion and get the crowd into you?
Well, what you've got to do is you've really got to over-exaggerate with your body language, and you've really got to flail your arms and, you know, contort your body and do that because people can't see your face. And that's the one way that they have of knowing, are you showing pain or showing emotion or showing happiness or showing anger is with that face. But now that it's covered up, you've got to do it with the rest of your body, and you've really got to oversell with your arms and your feet and chopping your feet or beating your chest or pumping your fist, doing things like that. But I had done it for so long that I think it would have been difficult or different for me to work without a mask. I was so used to working with a mask, it would have seemed weird to be without it.
Yeah. So in 2015, you did a documentary, Behind the Mask. Tell us about the project. How did that get started? Was it something that someone approached you, or was it something that you had an interest in doing?
No, a guy approached me, a guy named Michael Elliott, that's done several of those documentaries on wrestlers. And, you know, he's done them on the Rock and Roll Express and Magnum TA and Harley Race and Ivan Koloff. And Mike's good at what he does. He was a huge Patriot fan growing up as a kid. He said, you know, man, you were one of my favorite wrestlers ever. I loved you as a kid. And he said, now as an adult, he said, I've got an opportunity to do this. And he presented the idea to me. Somehow he got in touch with my wife, and my wife was the one that introduced me to Michael, and he approached me with the idea of doing it. And he did a great job. I'm very pleased with it. And it's done very well for us, man. We've sold a lot of those things, and we still sell them at my website, DaleThePatriotWilkes.com.
DaleThePatriotWilkes.com for the documentary. That's great. I mean, you'll send signed copies and all kinds of stuff on there, right?
Oh, yeah. We've got masks. We've got T-shirts. We've got pictures. We've got my DVD. So there's everything Patriot paraphernalia you want is at the website, DaleThePatriotWilkes.com, and every bit of it's autographed.
So Vader just entered the ring here, and, you know, he's involved in the match. How much did you work with Vader? Where did you work with Vader? And how good was he in his prime? Because he was in a similar position to you at this point where you guys were just kind of both beat to hell. Is that because of the Japanese style or wear and tear? Both two football players that really were pretty high flyers considering your size.
I think it's a combination of the football. I mean, listen, you play as long as he played and as long as I played, man. You put your body through a lot, and your body takes a beating. And a lot of folks don't think about this, but as football players, and we were both linemen, you do a lot of heavy lifting, and that takes a toll on your joints and your knees and your elbows and your wrists and shoulders. And then you couple all those years of playing football, and then two big guys that did fly around the ring a lot. I think that lends itself to a lot of injuries and the body sort of wearing out on you pretty quick. But I enjoyed working with Leon. I had worked against him once in WCW, and I'd heard nightmare stories about him, about how stiff he was and how he'd try to hurt you or take advantage of you in the ring. But I never had one problem with Leon working with him, and I worked against him in a couple of matches in the WWF. He put me over both times, and then we tagged together on a few occasions as well. So I had nothing but good things to say about Leon. God rest.
That shoulder block, and you just did it again 3/4 of the way across the ring. Were you physically feeling some of those bigger bumps at this point? I mean, were you in physical pain during this match, or was it just that you knew you needed to get some stuff done or else you were going to have long-term issues?
No, I was in pain. I had issues. I had major issues with pain, and I tore my tricep twice, and it was night after night after night of a 290-pound guy flying across that ring, landing on his elbows, and eventually those elbows gave out and those triceps gave out. So I was working with a lot of pain, and then it was starting to affect me in a lot of ways. When you've got a torn tricep and you've got a knee that's been shredded and blown out, you can't do things in the weight room that you normally could do. So therefore, your physique starts changing and you start looking a little thinner, and you just don't have that look that you once had because you can't lift like you once lifted. And so it affects a lot of things. So it was affecting what I could do in a weight room and what I couldn't do. It was affecting what I could do and what I couldn't do in the ring. As a matter of fact, Brett and I, we were talking about a match one night, and he wanted me to do a particular move. And I said, Brett, 2 years ago, I could have done it, but I can't do that anymore, man. I said, so I just don't have the confidence in myself due to the injuries that I'm dealing with that I can do that. And I don't feel comfortable doing it, so I'm not going to do it. So it was affecting me in a lot of ways.
Well, and it's got to be frustrating, too, because, yeah, man, you weren't that old at this point. I mean, you see some of the guys now and how late they're wrestling in their careers, and it's a shame that you didn't have another 3 or 4 years left in you because you were still doing great work here. I mean, this is a fantastic match, a lot of both finishes, crowds into it. Do you wish that you had another couple of years left in that body to stay in the business and maybe experience the late 90s here in North America when wrestling was hot?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I do. And I've thought about that a lot. I'll tell you, some of the lowest moments I've had in my career were just, I tore my tricep the first time in Japan. And I came back to the States and I had it repaired, and I went back a lot quicker than the doctor suggested. He told me to take close to a year off with the type of work you're doing. He said, if you were a guy that worked behind the desk, you could go back to work in a week, but you're not a guy that works behind the desk. You're a professional wrestler, so you're tough on your body. So I've just repaired a torn tricep, and you probably need to take 9 months to a year off. I didn't. I took 4 months off, and I went back to Japan. And I was back 2 weeks, and I was in the ring, and it tore again. And, man, that was just one of the longest, hardest nights of my life because I realized, man, my body is failing me. A business I've worked so hard to try to have a good career, to try to make it, to do what I know I can do, and to be someone that the fans want to see. And my body is just failing me, and it's letting me down. And, man, it was just a long, hard night that night, coming to grips with the fact that this may be the beginning of the end for me, and was the start of that. It really was.
You know, you had Bret Hart in the Sharpshooter, and now he's reversed it and obviously put it on you. But I can't remember many guys that ever put Bret into the Sharpshooter really in his entire career, and certainly not before this. Was that something that he came up with? And I'd imagine that was a pretty big compliment to you to allow you to do that to him, right?
Well, there was one time that he called that. We had called it, you know, before the match. But there was another match where I did it, and I think maybe that was the flag match with Vader when it was me and Vader against Davey Boy and Brett. where I did it in that match, but I just did it on the fly. It wasn't called. It wasn't set up. I just thought of it while I was standing in the corner. You know, the next time I get in, I'm going to put it on Brett. But the first time we did it, it was something that we had set up, and it was Brett's idea.
Yeah, when he just put you in there, and obviously you submitted, it was a fantastic match. Blitz, as we wrap things up, I want to ask you a few questions about your career. And man, he's still getting some stiff kicks in there, and what a fantastic heel. I mean, he really did a great job at this time. And, you know, I always forget just how good he was and how hated he was. Big pile driver there, laying in the punches, really, really puts him over. So as far as the documentary, is there something in there that will really surprise the fans about you and about your story?
Oh, I think so. Obviously, it's in my entire life. It's everything from the beginning and you know, to where we're at currently. And, you know, I've got one of my sons in there with me on a couple of occasions. My mom's a part of it. There's a lot of the guys I work with that were a part of it. You know, Bagwell and Stan Hansen and Bruce Pritchard and many others. So I think there's something for everybody there. If you're a college football fan, there's George Rogers, a Heisman Trophy winner that's a part of it. Some of the other guys that I played football with. If you're a wrestling fan, obviously there's a lot there for you. Then it also goes into a lot of the issues I dealt with after wrestling due to the injuries and my addiction and dependency on pain medicine. It led me down a dark path that eventually led me to prison. So it's a redemptive story as well. There's a lot there. I think it's well worth the $25 that you pay to get three discs and over 7 hours of stuff to watch. And one disc is just nothing but matches from all Japan. So there's a lot there.
And you go into great detail in the documentary on some of the personal struggles you had, substance abuse from the injuries. Obviously, there was a stint in jail. But I think the most important thing is you came out a better man. You obviously have been able to address and fix those issues. I guess the thing I want to know is how hard do you have to work on those issues and your sobriety all these years later? Is it a constant struggle or is it something that you just put behind you and dealt with and it's just a part of your story?
It's something that I've dealt with. I've put behind me. It's a part of my story. It doesn't define me. It was a part of my life for a period of time. But I'm fortunate, as you said, to have come out of it, to come out of it alive, man. Tom, when you think of all the guys and girls that I worked with throughout my career that are no longer with us, that died due to a lot of the problems that I had and a lot of the issues I was dealing with, they weren't able to come out. Man, it would have been great if they could have gone to rehab or even gone to prison and had a chance to gather their life back and to get it under control and to put it behind them. But so many of them, I mean, countless numbers of them, lost their lives due to these same exact issues and problems. And I'm just blessed that I'm not one of those that didn't make it.
Well, and I mean, from what I understand and the research I've done, I mean, for you, it wasn't that you were a junkie. You know, it was the fact that you were just in so much pain and it was the only way you were able to deal with it. Is that a fair characterization?
It is. Listen, I've told the story countless times. I'm going down the road, and this was that first stint I was telling you about when I was working for Vince in the early 90s. I went out on the road for a few weeks with him, and I'm in a rental car. John Nord's driving, Kurt Hennings in the passenger seat, and I'm in the back seat. And I've got an elbow that's swollen up like a grapefruit, and it's just driving me crazy with pain. And Kurt said, man, he said, what are you taking for the pain? That's what I'm taking, goody powders. It's a big thing in the South, goody powders. He said, goody powders? I said, yeah. He said, you don't have a doctor that'll prescribe you a Percocet or a Vicodin or something like that? And I was under the impression that you couldn't work and take one of those. I thought it would make you goofy and loopy. And I said, you mean you actually take those things and work? He said, I can't believe you work and don't take them. He said, here. And he reached over into the back seat. He poured about six of them in his hand out of his own bottle. Kurt did. He said, here, take those. And he said, before your match tomorrow night, take a couple of them. And he said, you won't feel any pain. And he said, you can go out and you can work and do what you want to do. And he was right. I took two of them. And man, I didn't feel any pain. I wasn't staggering. I wasn't falling around. I didn't get that drunk feeling I thought it would give me. I'd never taken pain medicine before. Well, those two that night that he gave me several years down the road, eventually turned into 120 a day. So they started out just as something that would allow me to go out and work, to do what I was being paid a lot of money to do what I wanted to do, what I loved doing, what I had dreamed of doing as a kid. They enabled me to go out and continue to work while dealing with these injuries, but it turned into a horrible, horrible, horrible addiction.
Well, I appreciate you sharing, and I think there's other wrestlers that have similar stories. The reason I thought it was important to bring it up with you is because you were doing it out of necessity. You were in pain. It obviously turned into an issue, but you ultimately were able to kick that issue. You came out on top. It's a fantastic story of redemption. You should just be so proud of that. And so I want people to understand that there are times when people do these things, again, out of necessity because they're in insurmountable amounts of pain, not because it's a fun little habit to pass time when you're going town to town. So I think it's important to talk about that. It was pain management. You learned a lot from it. You no longer have that issue. You dealt with it. Man, you should be so proud of yourself. It sounds like you've got a great life in South Carolina, a great family. Tell us, what are you up to these days? What's keeping you busy in this day and age for you?
Well, I've got two granddaughters. I've got a 2.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old. And I didn't realize life could be this good. Being a grandparent is the most phenomenal thing. It's amazing. And I spend a lot of time with those little girls and do a lot with them. But being a grandparent is just, it's a wonderful thing. And all my family's here in Columbia, and we're close. I've got 3 kids, 2 granddaughters, and life's good.
Man, I'm happy to hear that. Last question for you. How do you want to be remembered by the fans?
Well, just as a guy that was dedicated to the business, that gave his all for the business to entertain the fans, and that went out every night and did his absolute best, even to the point of ruining his body, affecting his health, to be able to give them what they take their hard-earned money and they buy a ticket to come watch us, and they deserve to get the best out of us every night. And I felt like I was a guy that did that and tried to do that every night. And I hope they remember me for that.
Well, you left it all out there for the fans. We'll have years to enjoy all the great work you did, especially some of this stuff in 97. More than anything else, so happy to hear that you are healthy, you're happy, you're enjoying life, you got love and family around you. Thank you so much for being here tonight and watching some matches with us and reliving some great moments in your career. We really do appreciate it, Del.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity. Thank you.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
So, as always, welcome back, and I want to thank the Patriot, the Trooper, Del Wilkes, for joining us. This match was all right, nothing to brag about, but put on a good show, and boy, did the heels get over. So, I did find it comical that a young Michael Cole doing the backstage promos prior to this one. It's funny and cool just to see how far he's come, and like him or not, he's been around the business, so that's good stuff. I also enjoy, like, face, heel, it doesn't matter. Brett, the best there is, best there was, the best there ever will be. And so he is always going to get a reaction from the crowd, whether it's cheering, booing. The crowd just loved reacting to him throughout this one. And there was, you know, a moment, I'd say the hot tag, which wasn't very hot when the Patriot got back in. That didn't get much of a pop. But throughout the whole thing, Patriot just not getting the reaction that you would expect from the crowd. So, yeah, Tom, what did you think of the payoff?
Well, to your point, Bret Hart probably didn't have a bad match in his career. And if he did, I certainly can't remember it offhand. Just phenomenal in the ring, face, heel, whatever he was, told a story. Every match was different. So phenomenal worker. I enjoyed the match. I thought it was a pretty solid match. And, you know, because the Patriot had won that match in July on Raw, you thought he might actually have a chance. So I think that they did a great job of building him up as a credible challenger, even though he wasn't a main eventer. And that's not always easy to do. So I thought that was really well done. Look, I would have loved to have seen the Patriot in his physical prime during this feud. Like he said, he was in a lot of pain. He called himself damaged goods at this point, but still put in a hell of an effort. And look, really, his career was basically over following this run. So in a couple months, his career was essentially over. You know, looking back, I think you really think about the courage and the grit he had to be in there. And I thought do a good job. Look, Bret Hart is a heel, man. Come on. I actually started thinking of him as a heel in the lead up to WrestleMania 12 against Shawn Michaels because I wanted Shawn to win. And I thought Bret was kind of like a whiny heel anyway. So he had been a heel in my household for a long time, but I loved when he embraced it. He turned it up a notch. I mean, it was incredible. And there are just so many moments that I hope we cover. We obviously don't have time to cover everything, but I mean, I think about the heel promo he cut on Vince McMahon after the cage. I mean, there are just so many moments where Bret was awesome as a heel. And I can't say this about many eras, but you could probably start watching every Raw after the WrestleMania 13 and watch it through the end of 97 and thoroughly enjoy it. That's how good the product was. And keep in mind, 2 hour Raw minus commercials. Oh, it's only 90 minutes. It's actually easy to get through. So I love the fact that he was cutting these great heel promos. Everything he did was awesome. The Hart Foundation was awesome. And I don't know if we'll ever see it again in this business where you can be the biggest heel in the company in Detroit and the biggest face in the company in Toronto. So just great stuff all around. Also appreciated Dell, you know, the Patriot, just the entire interview. Thought he was great. Thought he shared some great information. Fantastic guy. And, you know, obviously appreciated him opening up about his addiction. I think sometimes people try to put everyone in one category. And this is a guy that was just in pain, man. So some of the issues he had personally, he's just in pain. And, you know, one pill turns into 120, as he said. And it's sad, but so glad to hear that he's doing well. He's got grandkids and a great family life and put all that behind him. And it's great to hear that because some of these guys are never able to kick whatever issues they're having. The only other thing I had in my notes, Jeff, you know, most people don't think of him as a musician. Did you know that Bret Hart actually sang one song?
I did not.
It was a hit, man.
Oh, please just set me up for the next segment. Let's just keep moving, buddy. Oh boy.
All right. So Jeff, as always, give us an in-depth breakdown of what happened following the match.
That's just, I can't, boy. Anyways,
are they getting better or worse?
They're definitely getting worse. So we'll see what the fans say, though. So with that, though, we'll jump into the aftermath a little bit more here. So the Patriot continued his feud with just members of the Hart Foundation. And we had the interfering Vader, and he did take on Bret and the also interfering British Bulldog at Bad Blood, which this show was just shy of a month after this one. This one, I was confusing a little earlier, where the Patriot got the hot tag, quote, hot tag, that was not very hot. So that was interesting. But as you can see from this match, though, Bret just played the heel so well, grabbed the American flag that the Patriot had brought to the ring, you know, ripped it off the pole, used it to strangle the Patriot. Just great heel stuff. And then Bret finally, after he kind of beat down after the match a little bit, he finally left. It was one punch and one kick to Pat Patterson, who was trying to break things up, and then he got out of there. So I enjoyed just that little piece right there. As we already touched on at Bad Blood, Bret and the British Bulldog took on Vader and the Patriot in a flagpole tag team match, which had Hart pinning the Patriot for a 1-2-3 victory. This was initially just supposed to be a flagpole match, but then they added pinfall and submissions to this as well because the guys were kind of hurt a little bit. And so this match wasn't great, but this card, as Tom said a little bit earlier, is remembered more for having the first ever Hell in a Cell match between The Undertaker and who, Tom?
Well, I believe it was Shawn Michaels, and then there was some interference at the end, which I believe was, that's gotta be Kane! Is that right? Do I have the right match, Jeff?
That is correct.
I'm going to try and work that in, hopefully at least once a month, for as long as we're doing this podcast.
Gotta love the
I love Vince McMahon on commentary. And that might have been his greatest call.
Just imagine if it was Dr. Isaac Yankum interfering instead.
Hey, you know what would be good? You know how on NXT they have that camera where they show Mauro doing like the super like aggressive commentary?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine Vince in some of those calls? 1, 2, 3, go! Oh! oh no. Like, I'd love to see the facial reactions. I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I do enjoy those Moro videos. Those are always good. So
Twitter, please find it. All right, Jeff, continue.
So not just Bad Blood, we had the Hell in a Cell, we had this tag match, but we cannot forget also, this is one of those times where the fan actually made it to the ring after jumping the guardrail. And so I was surprised that he did not get just the absolute shit kicked out of him. Watching the footage, you could tell that he didn't get very far. The ref actually put a pretty good hip check into him to stop him. But Bulldog was ready to go. And so he kind of kicked him out a little bit too. But I don't know what it is, but something about Bret Hart and the fans getting in the ring with him. Maybe it's Bret. I don't know. Who knows? And then looking forward a little bit more on this one, the Patriot was actually supposed to team with Vader, Goldust, and Mark Marrow as part of the Team USA Survivor Series, which again, Legends, current superstar, Survivor Series. I want to put that out as often as possible. But this was Team USA, and he did not compete, though, because of injury, and then he was released in 1998. So unfortunately, he was not able to be a part of that one. The Hart Foundation, though, they broke up. It was late 1997. I say broke up, but it was actually just a series of really tragedies and unfortunate things that happened, starting with Brian Pillman was found. He was actually found deceased the day of Bad Blood when he didn't show up to the arena. Bret was out the door for WCW, and, you know, really one of the biggest moments in wrestling ever, you know, the Montreal screw job happened. Jim the Anvil and British Bulldog, they eventually left because of that and joined Bret in WCW. But Owen stayed, and of course, the unfortunate death and sad death of Owen Hart in 1999. So that was the end of that Hart Foundation at that time. But the Hart Foundation and its various kind of names, whatever it goes by, it's really continued to exist on and off in various forms with a bunch of different people. Of course, we'll recognize Tyson Kidd was there, Natty, Natalya, Davey Boy Smith Jr., just to name a few. But it's actually currently associated. It's part of MLW, and the members are Davey Boy Smith Jr., Teddy Hart, and our former guest, Brian Pillman Jr. So cool to kind of see, especially that legacy being carried, and Pillman talked about that a lot when he was on the show. So, you know, just really cool stuff to see them kind of carrying that name. So, Tom, a lot happening with the Patriot, the Hart Foundation, but what are your thoughts on the aftermath?
It's just sad to think. I mean, this incarnation of the Hart Foundation has one living member left. They all had untimely, surprising, shocking deaths. It's just terrible to think about. So I can't help but fantasy book the territory a little bit. And I think about what would have happened if Bret Hart stayed. Okay. So Bret, Undertaker, Shawn, the Hart Foundation. I mean, everything is just red hot at this point. And so you think about a lot of things, right? If Bret would have stayed, okay, who would he have gone on to feud with? Well, you would have gotten the Triple H match. You would have gotten the Rock match. You would have gotten more Austin matches. You probably would have gotten more Shawn matches, especially if Shawn didn't hurt his back. Well, how did he hurt his back? Well, he hurt it in a casket match at the Royal Rumble against The Undertaker. If Bret had stayed, would that feud and would that match have happened? I don't know. But perhaps Shawn doesn't get hurt and doesn't have to take a four-year hiatus, right? I'm assuming no matter what, Steve Austin would have been crowned champion. But at WrestleMania 14, instead of him beating a visibly hurt Shawn Michaels, maybe we would have gotten a different match. Maybe we would have gotten the rematch of him and Bret. I mean, it's just crazy to think about all of that. And then on a more tragic note, if Bret stays, does Owen Hart become the Blue Blazer? And then that accident obviously happened. And then if Bret hadn't gone to WCW and he hadn't gotten hurt by Goldberg, does he have a longer career? So, I mean, you could play this game a lot, but this is one of those situations where it's just the ripple effect that this had is just enormous, right? And then keep in mind that all of this kicks off the Mr. McMahon character and the Attitude Era, and it just goes on and on and on. So it's just crazy to think about. And I'll just throw this one out there for you, Jeff. Does Steve Austin become the megastar that he is without the Hart Foundation? Well, I don't know.
Bret Hart made Steve Austin at WrestleMania. I mean, I know there was the Austin 316 promo. I know Austin was picking up some steam. But, man, Bret Hart, between the Survivor Series 96 and WrestleMania 13 matches he had with Austin, made the guy, okay? And then him hurting his neck to Owen only threw gas on the fire of that feud and continued to build up this Steve Austin character. So you think about what, Austin's the biggest or one of the biggest stars of all time? It may not happen to the level it happened without Bret Hart, without the Hart Foundation. You just never know, man. The other thing that I'm thinking as I'm doing my research and putting together some notes for this show, you know, I'm like, did the Hart Foundation only last for like 8 months? And I'm like, well, that can't be right, because there were all these iconic moments. Like, there's the Bret heel turn, there's the Shawn stuff, there's Taker and him at SummerSlam, there's Calgary Stampede. And I'm running through all these moments and I'm like, well, WrestleMania 13 takes place March of 97, and Bret's gone in November of 97. So this entire Hart Foundation thing, just a little bit over 6 months. And you think about all the moments, all the matches, all the promos, and the Patriot, and Shawn Michaels, and Triple H, and The Undertaker, and the Hart Foundation. I mean, you think of all this stuff. This happened in like a really small stretch, but it was just phenomenal. So great stuff, Jeff. And like I said, I mean, every week from this point on was like can't miss television. And right after this, we go to the Austin era. And, you know, it's just this incredible attitude era that basically put WCW out of business because they just kicked their ass because of all these stories and characters. So with that being said, Patriot, Bret, Ground Zero. Jeff, what did the Torch have to say about this?
Yeah, I'll start, like you said, with a write-up from the Pro Wrestling Torch. I'll read part of it. At 16:20, Patriot invertedly elbowed the referee. Bret went for a full Nelson, but Patriot reversed it into another full Nelson slam for a two count. At 17:40, after a double collision, they exchanged some small packages for two counts. Patriot began to show some fire and applied the sharpshooter on Bret. Bret managed to power out of the move, and in a little side it says, giving away to his opponents how to reverse the hold, ? So to power out of the move and applied it himself. Patriot reached for the ropes but couldn't quite get to them. The ref then called for the bell. The ring announcer never said Patriot submitted, although it probably went without saying. After the match, Bret stomped away at the Patriot and pile drove him. Bret then broke the U.S. flagpole over his knee and choked Patriot with it. 3.5 stars. Got through it. The Wrestling Observer Newsletter didn't really have too much different to say about the match other than really just a similar write-up about the details. They gave it 3.25 stars. Grapple didn't have anything on this one. I think I had the thought too, Tom. I think if we don't see the match, we need to start adding it if possible. But didn't have anything on this one. And I just want to say, like, the Patriots started appearing in June of 1997. By the time this show was on in September of 97, he was already getting buried by Bret. So, you know, it was not a surprise that Bret won. He should have won. But it does kind of suck for the Patriot and the character that after the history he had in the wrestling business, he kind of came and went a little bit, and we touched on it a little bit, that he wasn't given more of a shot. You know, he kind of fed to the wolves right out of the gate. And so it's kind of unfortunate to see that, but, you know, the reviews still close to what they are. So, Tom, what's your hot take on the review of this match?
As Del Wilkes explained, I mean, he came in as damaged goods. What I've gathered from a few different interviews and things I've read is he came in, he was all messed up in terms of injuries and beat and couldn't do the things he used to be able to do in the ring. And so they knew, look, we're not going to get much out of this guy. And, you know, to your point, I mean, he was only in there for a few months. So I would have loved to have seen him healthy and have a longer run. And I don't know if it's so much they buried him as they realized this guy just doesn't have many bumps left on his bump card. So let's get a few matches and give him an opportunity to get some surgery and try and fix himself. And if he can wrestle again, there's a spot for him. But his doctor said, no, you can't wrestle. So I think that's what happened. And as you were saying that, the other name that comes to mind, a little bit different, but Vader, right? And that's a guy who came in with a lot of hype, and he was there longer and he did certainly wrestle more matches, but again, just a shell of his former self. So there's certainly performers over the years where, okay, what could Vader in his prime have done with Shawn Michaels? What could the Patriot in his prime do
with Bret Hart. And so, you know, some of these guys, they're just so beaten up. And a lot of them, I mean, both Vader and the Patriot, they worked that, you know, Japanese style for a little while there too. And it just, it takes its toll on the body. So with that being said, you know, I'll just say that I don't disagree with the reviews. I probably thought it was a little bit better. And again, our system in terms of the payoff score is a little bit different, because I don't necessarily think we're just looking at the quality of the match, but we're saying, what was the build to this? What took place after? What was the storyline? We're looking more of a holistic thing as opposed to just two guys in a ring for 20 minutes doing holds. So with that being said, Jeff, what do you have for your payoff score? And again, as always, we don't talk about these ahead of time. And so it's fun to see what he thinks. It's fun to see where mine stacks up. So what do you got, buddy?
Yeah, I'll give it a 5. I think the wrestling was fine. You know, the two didn't go above and beyond, but, you know, Brett gonna Brett. And no matter who you put him with, he's going to have very few bad matches. Like I said, I wish the Patriot would have had more time to develop the character. You know, it was established a little bit, but really during this run to really go over a little bit more, you know, you always want to see that for everyone. But fortunately, I'm getting really immediately buried, and the Hart Foundation as a whole is greater than the Patriot. So I'm just going to go with a 5. Not great, or, you know, not bad, but it's just what it is. So, Tom?
Yeah, I guess I liked it slightly more than you. I had this at a 5.5. And again, I look at it more of everything that took place prior. I love that angle they did on that July 28th Raw. Huge surprise. Didn't see it coming. I'm probably a little biased to it because I was there, but just a shock finish, and I loved it. And I thought, okay, this guy comes out of nowhere. He gets this major win that was an upset, and he was kind of a made man and had some credibility. And you thought, hey, maybe they will give him the title. So again, I liked it a little bit more than you. I thought it was a solid match, 5.5. The other thing I'll say, and I was just thinking about this because I heard a podcast this week with Stephanie McMahon, and the question came up of, how did you beat WCW, or how did you beat Ted Turner? And she's like, look, what my father always says is we just had better stories than them. And so we beat them through storytelling and characters. And I really think this stretch shows exactly why they won the war, if you will, because it was just so good. And this is before the Attitude Era even officially kicked off. So again, I liked it a little bit more than you. I really love this stretch. 5.5. That's all I have. What do you have for us, Jeff?
Good stuff, man. It was a fun episode, though. It's always cool kind of revisiting some of these people. And I will say that if anyone has an authentic pair of Bret Hart glasses that they're willing to part with, just hit up my DMs. Feel free. Of course, you can always find both Tom and myself at Payoff Tom, at Payoff Jeff. We're always out there. The Patriot, more important than us, though, of course, you can be found on Twitter. He is at Del Wilkes. That is at DelWilkes, Del Wilkes. Check out his documentary. It's called Behind the Mask. You can find it, you know, a bunch of different places, but he's got that as well as some merchandise, and it is available. It is DelThePatriotWilkes.com. So, good stuff. Remember, as always, subscribe to The Payoff. Give us 5 stars. Spread the word about the show. Always love, you know, interacting with fans, hearing from fans. It's, you know, brings a smile to our face. All over social media ourselves, all day, all night, all right, at Payoff Pod. That's where you can find us. Simple stuff too, one tier, payoffpatreon.com. Keeping it simple for you. So, Tom, I know you've dropped a couple jokes on me, and so I have, since we focused on the Hart Foundation today, I have a Canada-based joke for you. So, where do you go in Canada if you want to find an attractive woman?
I don't know.
Vancouver. So throw it to you, buddy. It's just as bad as yours. So, Tom, feel free to take us home.
Did you make that up, or did someone tell you that?
Nah, I Googled it.
Yeah, see, I make up mine. Mine's original material. You're a cheat.
I'm funnier than you on Facebook, so, you know.
Counterfeiting your jokes. All right. So with that being said, a couple thank yous. The coach, we appreciate you being a friend of the podcast. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who in real life is good friends with Del Wilkes. We appreciate you. And finally, Del, thank you. You were an awesome guest. We appreciate it. And most importantly, to everyone listening, thank you. We couldn't do it without you. Spread the word. We appreciate it. With that, we are out on another episode of The Payoff.